Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast, here with Benji Nice, and as usual for a special once every 4 or 5 year or 3 year edition of the Olympics men's road race recap. Long stage, two main climbs, Fuji and Mikuni. The last climb is the most important one. Obviously, Mikuni, it's steep. There's like 3Ks at 11% in the middle of it, like 7Ks, 10% all up, then a descent and rolling like a really slow, taxing drag to the finish, like 30Ks, 25Ks long before the finish. So the question was, favorite was Pogacar, then Wout van Aert. Third favorite was Roglic, then Evenepoel, Slovenia and Belgium, but would a solo winner be able to get away? I didn't wake up because the benefit of watching cycling races all year is I can figure out when to wake up, and I didn't move from Australia to a landlocked micro state to continue waking up at 4 a.m. to watch cycling races. So I got up at 8 a.m. like a normal person. So Benji will run you through what happened at the start.
Did you just call me a non-normal person?
Yep.
The race started off and it was the typical kind of start that you have at these events. And we see Nik Dlamini, Michael Kirkl, Juraj Sagan for Slovakia, Tsortsakis for Greece, Luis Aular, Grosu, Romania. We've got Paul Dumont, I think that's Burkina Faso, and Azadov, and that is
Froome for Kenya.
Azerbaijan. So a pretty large breakaway, actually, 8 riders, but not necessarily the riders you expect to hold on for a while. There's some decent climbing in there with an Aular and with a Kirkl, for example. But the initial part was noticeable that in the peloton, when the gap started opening up towards that breakaway, there was no team that would take control, because obviously you've got that teams are not with too many mates. They can't exactly offer riders up one by one everywhere. So here, actively, Belgium and Slovenia decided to wait a bit at the start, and the gap opened up to like 13 minutes. And then Belgium took Van Avermaet and put him at the front of the group, started pacing like mad for a bit. Then he stopped again because he was like, okay, I can't just do this alone. And eventually we had Trotnik come to the front, then Trotnik and Van Avermaet started pacing for a while. Next to that, some other stuff happened as well. We had Geraint Thomas crashing, also Ciccone in the same crash. And we also saw that Roglic was going towards the medical car in the early parts of the race, which is probably not the best thing you want to see at the start of the race. And that was basically everything for the Dauchi Road, because we had the peloton pace a bit and the breakaway pace a bit. And the gap was max 20 minutes, started going down again. And when we started at the foot of Fuji, we had around, I don't know, 15 minutes left roughly. And that's when Trotnik took control and really hammered it.
Still a large group. I mean, Thomas crashing again. I don't know how many times he's crashed in the last 2 months. He had a tweet. It's got to the point where he's like, he seems kind of sick of people criticizing his crashing. He basically said it was Teo Gegenhardt's fault in front of him straight away on Twitter before the race had even finished. I think a few other notable things were Italy getting Ciccone to pace. Surprised by that. Maybe the crash caused that. Maybe he didn't feel so good. But I'm like, Ciccone is better than Nibali on this parkour. So that was a little bit surprising to me. But yeah, not too much happened, really. This classic World Champs or Olympics race with just a weak break in front and then everyone cruising behind. So, you know, 20 minutes in front, they weren't going too bad. Maybe Fuji, I'll be interested to see the power data, but still a really large group afterwards. And it was Kosner for our Benji. Like, it can't have been that hard a pace. After Fuji, then there's this undulating terrain. He was pacing the break back. I think the next action was really Evenepoel attacking before Kolesnikov pulled before the base of Mikuni, marked by Nibali and even Kelderman was kind of getting a move as well. But yeah.
Yes, exactly. And when you see that three-man group get away, you know that it's a bit difficult because Evenepoel and Nibali, they have a bit of a history. Deutschland Tour 2 years ago, they really weren't that well of a friends. We had Evenepoel attacking, and every time that happened, Nibali was like, I'm going to hunt you down just because you're Evenepoel. And they had a bit of beef in the media. And right now, Evenepoel goes, and the only person that responds is Nibali. So I was like, oh, flashbacks. Awesome stuff. But when they go into the attack, my Belgian and Nibali heart starts rising and beating harder, but it quickly didn't really look like it was going anywhere because Nibali at a certain point just didn't take over anymore. And when Evenepoel has to do all the work, then it's not going to happen. And they eventually got caught again by pacing in the other group, which still had Trotnik pacing. Like, that man literally paced how long? 100K in this race? Jan Trotnik, absolutely underrated rider. We keep telling you, and oh my God, I'm so hyped about him, like, genuinely.
Yeah, and before we get onto the main part of the race, which is the group going to Bakuni, I mentioned our show partner for the podcast, Locole. They've been supporting the podcast since the Giro d'Italia last year. And if you didn't pick up any kit during the Tour de France, never fear. They've just launched the new Bradley Wiggins Locole collection. There's the lightweight collection, the McLaren Project Aero collection. So go and check it out at www.locole.cc. Plenty of different kits for your taste, whether it's speed or comfort on Cafe Rise. So yeah, thanks to Locole for supporting the podcast. But yeah, onto Mikuni, Benji, where it was actually Belgium trying to keep it in. They had no Dylan Teuns. They had Benoot and Marty van Seven on. Evenepoel was cooked. He was couldn't do anything. And it looked like they were just trying to keep it together for Van Aert. But the problem was, it was like Benoot was done pretty quickly. Maori was thrashing about. See the GC group bunching up around him. Yeah. And it's like, there's going to be an attack really soon, and Van Aert is going to have to close down himself. So, yeah, it's Pogacar basically attacking in the saddle. My view is Pogacar attacked earlier than he would have wanted to normally because he thought they would play the Roglic-Pogacar 1-2, and Roglic should be able to sit on Van Aert and the group behind, and they don't have team radios. So that's my view. Or do you think, Benji, based on what we saw at the Tour, he's always going to attack super early?
I think that Pogacar did want to attack relatively early because Van Aert is still there and he needs to drop Van Aert. But you indeed have to find that balance, like you say. You don't know if Roglic already said to him before the climb started, okay, this is not going to be my day. This is not okay. Like, I'm not feeling so great. And he dropped relatively early on the climb, just like in Evenepoel, for example, a bit later than Evenepoel, I think Roglic dropped. So if you're dropping that early, I'd say that you probably already warned your teammate, but on the other hand, it could go so quickly. You know, it's so hot and so full. You can go into the ultimate depths of everything just in a second if all goes wrong. And Pogacar went and decided to go early, and I think that's basically simply because Van Aert needs to get dropped ASAP, and everybody, every single climber in that race knew that they want to get rid of Van Aert there. And then the Van Aert show started because, quite simply, he was the key to a lot of tactics that were being played out in the next 15 kilometers. When Pogacar goes, we see two people follow him. I think it was McNulty and Woods, right?
Yeah, McNulty and Woods followed Pogacar. McNulty, the teammate, trade teammate at UAE with Pogacar, he was relaying with him as he could. He was helping him a little bit on the climb, which suggests Pogacar wasn't like just straight up riding away from everybody. Woods sitting on a little bit, and behind was Van Aert pulling a lot. Bettiol gave him, helped a little bit, but mainly yep. Van Aert, and he was bringing it back. Van Aert brings it back to like 9 seconds on the climb, which suggests that Pogacar's not doing crazy, crazy numbers if Van Aert can keep it close on really steep gradient. And then all these riders like Kwiatkowski, Carapaz, Uran, those sort of riders, better climbers, they attack. Well, mainly actually Kwiatkowski attacking, showing really good legs once again. His trade teammate Carapaz with him. He then relays, and so we have them bridging across to Pogacar with Van Aert dropped, but not by much. And we're near to the end of Mikuni now.
Yeah.
And so when you have that group of Carapaz, Kwiatkowski, Uran, get to McNulty, Woods, Pogacar, and Gerdu, they all stop. They all stop over the top and immediately on like while Van Aert's coming back to them.
It was honestly for one reason only as well, because like when you see their cooperation, it's good. They were working together well towards the top, and then you've got a rider in that group, Woods, that has not worked together with the group. He hasn't taken over at any point on the climb, and he decides to attack away. And obviously Pogacar's going to be like, I'm going to follow you. I'm going to take you out here. I'm not going to have this happen. And then I'm going to just sit up because like, you're trying to benefit off of me. And that really is a disadvantage for the cooperation in the front group. And I think that was the final drop that made that group sit up completely. and allowed the ability of Fanart closing back on. And Pogacar tried to pull a little smart one in a corner in a small downhill section just after the top to get away from that front group. But everybody was on his wheel, and then they just wait. Well, they didn't wait on purpose, but they just didn't really cooperate anymore. And Fanart was able to come back, but has spent quite some energy yet. But I think that one challenge is done for Fanart. You've got over the climb with the best riders. You're with the best riders on top of the Mikuni Pass. You've got the plateau section on top, then the Kagosaka Pass downhill and to the line. A flat section, well, not really super flat, but that's speedway. So the next challenge starts. Every single attack, every single person in the group is going to look at you because you are the rider that is on paper the fastest sprinter in the group. And I think that really played a huge role in everything that followed.
All these sort of riders are not going to want to go to the finish in this quite a large group. It played out similarly to, as we expected, a group of 10 to 12 after Mikuni. You've got Van Aert, Betiol, Fuglsang, Uran, Kwiatkowski, Adam Yates comes back, David Gurdu, Mollema, Carapaz, Pogacar. Forgive me if I've missed anybody. So those sort of riders, Betiol. I said, Betiol's okay. In there as well.
Okay.
So they're not going to want to go to the sprint finish with Wout van Aert. So you start to see attacks. I think Mike Woods attacking, Wout van Aert closing, Pogacar, and I think Pogacar trying to make a move, Woods attacking again, Mollema attacking with Kwiatkowski and Maximilian Schachmann, who's come back, then Pogacar and Betiol getting in a move, then Fuglsang. And so you have all these attacks, and van Aert and Pogacar being lent on a lot. Pogacar actually was helping a little bit.
Yeah.
Kwiatkowski attacks again. Kwiatkowski really rode for gold here. Then McNulty and Carapaz. And it's like all these attacks, you know one of them is going to work. You know that everyone in the group is going to keep trying. And eventually they did. McNulty and Carapaz move. Peloton stops. No one follows them. And it goes out immediately to 20 seconds with 24Ks to go. And McNulty and Carapaz, they're the perfect riders to go away together because 50-50 in a sprint against each other, they'd be like, okay, 50-50 in a sprint. If we work together till the last 500 meters, we're guaranteed at worst a silver. Great outcome. Because if you miss a split in the group behind, you might come 10th. And that's what happened. Wout van Aert, eventually, he's pulling a lot. Uran was helping him a little bit. But the cooperation, it was like we saw in the Tour de France again. The cooperation isn't great because what are you going to do? Pull full with Wout van Aert and then get smashed in the sprint at the end.
Additionally, I think that the train teams, the normal teams that they ride on the entire season, do play a role here because you have Kwiatkowski in that second group. You have Pogacar. Pogacar helped a little bit before they got away. And while those two riders were away, he actually stopped working a bit until they actually came closer again. And then he started working again. But Kwiatkowski didn't take over at all. And I think you have to partially think about the fact that Kwiatkowski got a TDF win last year from Carapaz. So what is he going to be like? Is he going to be like, okay, I'm going to be the person that is going to ruin it for my guy here? Like, that'd be I think that plays a role personally, but that's just my opinion here. But yeah.
Well, 12Ks to go, 42 seconds. I don't know if they knew the time gaps. The peloton had been stopping and starting. Van Aert would try and accelerate. Gaudu and Woods would try and close him. They then stop again. Eventually, Van Aert decided to just try and close the gap himself, and he brought it from 42 to 25 to like 17, 18, 15 seconds with 9Ks to go. Betiol cramps up, but they just couldn't close it. McNulty's on this rise on the speedway section, and he just also looks like he starts cramping or something blows with McNulty, like at the end of a marathon race when someone hits a wall and Carapaz goes clear and no one helps Van Aert. No one continues that action. They stop again, and it goes out from 15 seconds to 30 seconds again. Now, Benji, A, do you think race radio, team radios would have made a difference? B, did you see where they were getting accurate time gaps?
Well, I think if you look at through the entire Parker, you'd say race radios do matter. But when it comes to the chasing there, I think we've seen in a lot of races this year that even with race radios, cooperation and second groups go really badly most of the time. So when those two got away and Van Aert was still in that group, I was pretty sure they were going to lean on him completely for the entire chase, whether that's with race radios or without race radios. When it comes to the time going down again towards the speedway section when Van Aert went ham, that's perhaps where a race radio would have influenced the behavior of others because they're going to hear, okay, it's 15 seconds now. We might actually have a chance of getting silver and gold instead of just fighting for the bronze medal because people will start thinking about bronze medals. If Fanart is pacing a lot, they know that if Fanart does all the work, they can try and sneak away and get that bronze in the end if they don't actually catch the riders ahead. So that also plays a role in the cooperation. And I think all those things combined meant that Fanart had to do it alone. He had some help here or there. Uran took over for like 2-3 seconds, but in the end, that's not going to really move the needle. And I think the second that we got onto the final, I think 3-4 kilometers, it was a bit of an uphill section as well, just after Carapaz dropped McNulty, and that's where Fanart got countered. And Fanart being countered displayed that he as well was not really great anymore, because he started dropping from people that got away from him. I think Woods was one of the riders that attacked very well in that latter part, and two riders went off, then Pogacar in a group of three, and then Fanart was just behind that, and that group was kind of splintering all over the road for a second, and eventually that came all together again. But you know that they're once again going to look at Fanart, and when that happens and they sit up in the final 3 kilometers for like 10 seconds, you know that the rider up front is gone. And I think that from that point onwards, I was looking at Carapaz as the new Olympian champion.
34, 35 seconds with three and a half Ks to go and a group not cooperating behind. It was done. They were all playing for silver. Richard Carapaz going solo. I mean, he had time to celebrate. He couldn't believe it. He was smiling beforehand. I think Ecuador, they didn't win a medal at the Rio Olympics. They haven't won a gold since a race walker like a long time ago in Atlanta.
Second gold ever. Third medal ever.
Solo. El Jagua Dorado de Tulca. In the hot conditions now, Amazon can also get warm where he's from. I'm reading up some statistics that, you know, Jaguars can catch a variety of prey. Well, today, McNulty, he basically just, it was like a marathon. McNulty was working with him. He didn't even attack him, just a little acceleration over a rise, and it was too much, his pace. I mean, he's an opportunist, and his palmares, Richard Carapaz, are crazy. Giro d'Italia, podiums on GC at both the Tour and the Vuelta, including the Tour a couple of a week ago, won Tour de Suisse. He now wins the Olympic Games road race. And this is the way he rode Mikuni. Sit on, don't follow the initial Pogacar attack, knows that Pogacar was always in sight, led Fanart. What's the Belgian phrase, Benji? Eat his self?
Eat himself?
Yeah.
I've got no clue what you're saying.
Let's Fanart close that gap to 9 seconds. Bridges, again on the wheel often of Kwiatkowski, waits then in the valley afterwards for attacks, Fuglsang attacks, Kwiatkowski attacks, goes with McNulty, a strong time trialist, perfect timing, done. It's so efficient. There's no wasted, nothing wasted from Carapaz in this race at all. And that's just the way he rides and the way he is able to win huge races, even though he's not like a watts per kilo monster. Whereas like Woods is gapping the group off his wheel in the last 5Ks, but he just, the timing or whatever didn't work. So an incredible win for Carapaz. I'm really, really happy for him. Even I feel like I underrated him. I don't think I bigged him up enough in the preview, and I felt stupid watching him do this. And I was thinking classic Richard Carapaz. So a massive win for Ecuador. I mean, I don't know if people want to say, is this bigger than a Giro win for the country? It seems huge, a gold medal at the Olympics solo. And, yeah, really happy. But there was the inevitable reduced bunch sprint behind Benji, which kind of played out as expected.
Well, yes and no. I think that a lot of people thought that Fanart would still snipe it completely. But in the last, like, five-ish kilometers, we saw Fanart drop twice from Pogacar's wheel and from other people's wheels. And from that point on, I thought, okay, he's probably almost done for the sprint as well. So it's going to be hard to completely dominate the sprint from that point onwards. And Fanart was at the front in that sprint, and Pogacar chose the wheel of Fanart. Mollema decided to kind of go around and try to box in Pogacar a bit and be on the right side of Fanart's back wheel. And we saw Fanart directly responding to a move from the back of the group, and he was able to just snipe true to the line, but Pogacar came around, and towards the end it was very close, and I thought Pogacar has silver when I saw it, but the photo finish showed the other way around. Fanart was taking silver and Pogacar ended up with the bronze medal here. So a very strong sprint by Pogacar. We know that after a very difficult race that has a lot of energy spendage. Van Aert's sprints are a bit less, and today that's also the case, but he was also, in my eyes, the strongest rider in the race. I dare to say that even with Carapaz being the winner, that doesn't take away from Carapaz. Carapaz was amazing, but Van Aert had to literally close every single attack, and eventually he ends up beating everybody in the group anyway. So very strong ride.
Here's the top 10. Richard Carapaz, 1:07 ahead of Van Aert, Pogacar, Mollema, Woods, McNulty, Gurdu, Uran, Yates, Schachmann coming in 10th. I mean, Schachmann, he prepped a lot for this race and it ended up being just probably a little bit too hard for him. Kwiatkowski, 11th. I think he tried to put it all on the line for gold, and that's why he didn't finish in that front group. A good ride from McNulty too as well, I think 6th. The big losers of the day, Spain. No one in the top, well, I'm trying to filter now where the Spain, no one in the top 20. That's horrendous.
Yeah.
For Spain. Italy as well, no one in the front group. Ediol cramping, it can't be helped, but not in the top 10 as well with a team of five is pretty bad.
And then Verdi started dropping on Fuji already. Like,
yeah.
It's just not good. And you start thinking about stuff. And in the last few days, they had their Soigneur or something that had a COVID positive, and then you start thinking perhaps they tested negative and perhaps it will still come out that they might still have it, stuff like that, and that comes into your mind then, but let's hope it's not the case.
Australia, Port came 48th, and Adam Yates was good. Adam Yates was pretty solid. He just couldn't do anything for Great Britain, and we didn't really expect much from Thomas or Gagan Hart. But yeah, stoked for Carapaz. I think I want to see the most outrageous gold. I want him fully decked out in gold for the next 3 years, because we only have 3 years. I want him to completely one-up Greg Van Avermaet. I think he's a pretty popular winner as well. And I think the thing about other riders that could have played it differently, it's not really what could teams have really done. Like Lutsenko just wasn't good enough to be in the group. Yeah. It kind of played out the same way we expected. I mean,
I hoped for a bit more attacks before Mikuini personally. Like the Evenepoel attack and so forth, that's one I expected before Mikuini, but I wanted some people to try earlier because some people just don't have the chance of following on Mikuini, and we saw them eventually dropping on Mikuini. I expected a Lutsenko or a Betiol move earlier, and eventually Betiol was super strong on Mikuini, but wasn't strong enough. And then you start doubting, what if he went earlier and tried something earlier, because that's how we could do something like that. We had the entire Italian team offering themselves up just before Mikuini to try and get Betiol onto that climb properly and Moscon. And eventually I didn't see Moscon at all on Mikuini and afterwards. So yeah, it's a bit unfortunate. They rode strongly before Mikuini and on Mikuini, Italy, but it didn't really pay off.
I think Van Aert, I would temper the praise a little bit of Van Aert. And I know it's not a surprise at this point that people are going to make him work. It's literally not a surprise, and it's not a criticism of, if you're David Gaudu, what are you going to do? Work with Van Aert? So he needs to think of, there has to be another strategy. And eventually, when the gap got to 45 seconds, he was like, okay, I'll just bring it back myself and stop asking people to pull. Or so that's what I think he needs to do. Either make a decision, I'm just going to pull this back, Carapaz and McNulty, and just do it myself. Or wait, and go for one huge attack. The problem is he's tired after Mikuini. It's hot. People are all sitting on him. Dropping people like Woods and Pogacar on a 5% rise is easier said than done. But, yeah, it's not a surprise that this keeps happening. And
it's logical.
He needed a teammate. He needed Dylan Terns or someone. Do you think Terns could have been in that group?
No, I don't think so. I think that this was simply for the strongest of each nation, and didn't see anyone with a duo, and that's a sign of something. And when it comes to the Belgian team, I think Evenepoel disappointed. Let's be real about that. Like, we didn't think he would be the best on the race. We thought his odds were basically way too close and he was too much of a favorite. And that seemed to have played out a bit. And I think that it also, here they play, like, we see this top 10, and the majority of that top 10, I think only Yates didn't do the TDF, right?
Yeah, they all did the TDF. So Kwiatkowski did it, Fuglsang did it, Almeida didn't do it, and Betiol, I don't think. So I mean, a lot of the people that didn't do the TDF, and we saw it at Imola, people that did the TDF were fine. Liège, people that did the TDF were good. Roglic as well was disappointing. Came 28th in a group with Guillaume Martin, George Bennett, Hirschi. I definitely think, like, no surprise that it would have been a big help for Pogacar to have two Slovenian teammates to work. But, yeah, I don't know. It's not a criticism. Maybe the crash affected him, his preparation, etc. But, he just wasn't good on Mikuni, and he looked, maybe the heat was he was struggling with as well. But to be honest, everyone that was in that group performed really well in the top 10, and someone had to eventually go solo, and it's El Hagla. So a pretty exciting race, and another we're still going to wait for a reduced bunch sprint. any last thoughts on this, Benji?
Honestly, I really enjoyed it. Carapaz is a beautiful winner. I really enjoy El Hagla. We've enjoyed him the last year and a half, 2 years almost. He had the Giro victory, second in the Vuelta. We had third in the Tour. We had gifting that stage to Kwiatkowski. That's one thing that makes you like a person even more. And therefore, I'm very happy that he won it. And I even put it on Twitter. I secretly said on Twitter with a shushing emoji, okay, I'd actually like him to win it. And hopefully my Belgian neighbors didn't hear that. Otherwise, I'll get deported tomorrow. So I guess that's a thing now. But I'm really happy you won. I'm really happy that we've got a podium like this with Wout van Aert and Pogacar. A podium of three riders that have been very strong for the entire last 2 years and deserve to be on this podium. Like, a McNulty would have been a nice winner as well. But I feel like the Olympic Championships feels fun if it actually, like, gives a medal to people as well who have been very strong for the last 2 years. And therefore, I feel like Carapaz, Van Aert and Pogacar deserves those medals a tiny bit more. Sorry, US people. That's just a personal take there.
I wanted McNulty and Carapaz to sprint for it. That would have been more exciting to me. But that was the Olympic road race recap. Very enjoyable. We've got the women's race tomorrow, so tune in for that. Get up early and watch that as well. And we'll have the recap straight afterwards. But yeah. Stay tuned to see what Ecuador and Ineos drum up for Richard Carapaz to wear an all-gold suit in the next.
Movistar is going to be happy about this.
Yeah, exactly. Imagine. They should have paid him whatever he wanted. until then, ciao.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.